All right. Good morning, everyone. My name's Lee. My name's Lee. I'm grateful recovering sexaholic. Jeff said I needed no introduction, so that was kind of interesting. I've got, it's been a total privilege to be here this weekend. I'm sure we all feel the same way. This is just an amazing, amazing place. And then John and Barbara and God have made it even more amazing. And I want to thank them up front for that. I'll be referring to you guys, if you don't mind, since you've already been showcased all day yesterday. You probably won't mind if I continue to talk about what you gave us this weekend. Before I figured what I'd do is I ended with a song the other night. If you don't mind, I'll play one more song. Actually, I'll begin with a song. I figured if I begin on a high note, then I can just fizzle out from there the rest of the time. One comment about, you know, the guitar and what it's meant to me. I started playing when I was 11 years old, and you know, it progressed from there. And it was a gift. It was also from a sexaholic recovery point of view, it was also a fig leaf for me. You know, I would be asked at parties. I would bring my guitar to the parties, and it was something I could hide behind. Frankly, I really was socially inept. I'm an outgoing person, but socially inept, if you can put those two things together. And so it was a mode for trying to just connect as best I could with people in the best way I could. As a matter of fact, that 10th grade typing class girl, who ended up being my wife, by the way, if you caught that the other night, Wendy, I gave her a tape of my classical guitar songs, and at the very end of that tape, I sang Heart of Gold by Neil Young on that, and I told she cried when she heard that. And that became our theme song throughout our whole marriage, Heart of Gold. But I just want to make a comment about just this whole idea of our gifts before sobriety and like gift of music or the gift of the charisma that we used to use in the wrong ways or the gift of that masterful mind that we used in wrong ways. Yeah, I certainly did use my music in wrong ways. You know, many nights going down to the basement and just fantasizing about playing for whatever, you know. Anybody play guitar in here? There we go. There's a couple guys play guitar. And you know why we learn how to play guitar, right? Why we do it? To get chicks, right? That's not why I learned, though. But anyway, so my music was misused in many respects. But it was also used for the gift of playing for weddings and making people move places that you couldn't move them in any other ways except for music. As far as those gifts go, you know, my music went dormant for about 10 years. It's only been the last 8 or 9 years or so that it's come back and to be a gift for me. So I was talking with a woman yesterday here, you know, one of the spouses that was very lamenting about her spouse giving up music. And I assured her, or best I can, I'm not God, that it'll come back. If the seed's there, it'll come back, you know. We got some other musicians in the audience here, and I'm sure they would say the same thing, that it'll come back. So all those gifts will come back. I'm going to sing a song here that all of you probably heard before, but you might not have ever thought about it in this context. And this is a song that really speaks to the still suffering sexaholic out there. It really describes the suffering alcoholic, but I think it's sung by the suffering spouse also. And for the Essenons, who I deeply respect that are here, you know, never blow out that candle if you can help it. That candle that you had lit for so many years that was drawing your spouse back in. My wife never blew out that candle. I think this song is what she would have sang to me, I think, at some point. I'm just too nervous to play it. Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Your heart won't, I know that you've got your reasons.
These things that are pleasing you will hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able. Though the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're guiding you home. And freedom, oh, sweet freedom, that's just some people talking. Your prison is walking through this world all alone. Don't your feet get tired when the winter time comes? The sky won't snow and the sun won't shine. It's hard to tell the night time from the day. Now you're losing all your highs and lows. Ain't it funny how the feeling goes away? Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? Climb down from your fences, open the gate. It may be raining, but there's a rainbow above you. You better let somebody love you. You better let somebody love you.
Desperado was not a partner, right? And didn't know how to be a partner. And that certainly was me. I learned a new term this weekend. It's called coupleship. I learned that. And that to me is kind of is even deeper than partnership. That's what I learned this weekend. And I'd like to reflect on what I think we heard this weekend, kind of a recap. You know, at the end of the Olympics, they kind of go through, here's what we saw in the Olympics for the last, whatever, 11 days or whatever. I feel like we've been through that kind of a beautiful event that it's worth recapping. First of all, I want you to think about, from John and Barbara's point of view, the selfless service and giving that they did in the partnership with SA and Essanon to fly from Chicago out to here. And to take that weekend to do that. That's an example of selfless giving and service and partnership to us and to themselves. And Barbara talked about the courage she needed to come here to people she didn't know. I think partnership involves courage a lot of times. I know early on in recovery, we get ahead of our spouse, if you want to call it that, either the Essanon or SA, and we hear a lot of fear that our other partner may not make it, you know. And there's a lot of courage required there. You know, and I've heard that courage is not the lack of fear, it's the response to fear, you know. So it took a lot of courage in this partnership that we saw in that commitment to recovery. I'm sure it took a lot of trust in each other. I don't know about you, but would you know for sure what your spouse was going to say if she got up to this podium? It took a lot of trust, and it shows the trust that they had in each other to come here. And it took trust in the fellowship, the partnership of the fellowship, to be able to come here. And I mean, you think about it, this was open. It was open. And that was beautiful. And I think it took unconditional love, which is the core of partnership and coupleship. And it took the core of it all, that's trust in God. At the end of the day, there's no way any of this can happen without trust in God. You know, this was not a self-help weekend, by the way. No. I'm sure we've been to those. I was at the Dale Carnegie class, Dale Carnegie, back in 1987, searching. I remember just to show how it doesn't work without God, I got back from that class and it said, never criticize, condemn, or complain in public. You only do that in private, and you praise in public. And that was the, you know, the head thing they were trying to drill in as one of the principles. And so I got on my wall, I took a little piece of paper and I had made a little blocks of a calendar, and I thought, okay, I'm going to see how many days in a row I can try to, you know, be this kind of a person to everybody. And I don't know, I think I went like 5 days in a row, and then all of a sudden the X's started getting spottier and spottier. And that's the truth of what we've heard this weekend if we're not bringing God into it. It'll just be something that evaporates. And for that matter, my spirituality is only has a shelf life of about 24 hours anyway. I have to renew it each morning at noon. I only live a third of a day at a time myself. I don't know about you, but I get up in the morning, I have that prayer meditation, being with God. I go to work at noon. I break out to a meeting or go out to lunch and be with God. Come home, do that meditation after supper, a little bit of meditation, and then have the evening, and then a prayer before going to bed. So I never live a whole day, you know, without that breathing and that partnership with God. I think I heard also work, a lot of work, and commitment. You know, it was actually, I'll tell you what, I felt, I'm really never embarrassed in my SA groups or AA either when I share from the heart. But I have to tell you, Friday night, there was a point of embarrassment at the very end when I had to share about where I was at now in the last, being in the basement for about 18 days. And by the way, I got out last Saturday. I asked, you know, it was mutual. We came to a mutual understanding. What really was that, by the way, the two pieces that we agreed on, as we laid in bed cuddling, she came down to me. It was, I asked for her commitment and our commitment into recovery. She started going some Al-Anon meetings. She's sneaking up on the SA, maybe S-Anon again, maybe. And she asked for commitment from me for a growing in that intimate purity, instead of allowing the little sexaholic Mr. Hyde in there from time to time. And when I heard that, I knew that we were ready in my mind. And so I got on my knees last Saturday afternoon, I asked her if I could come back. She said yes. I think that's true partnership. And I was a little embarrassed to be 21 years having to take the marriage engine and have pieces all over the driveway and tell you that that's where I was at. But then I got to hear John and Barb all day yesterday. And working on that engine, you know? And it's kind of a funny thing. We talk about marriage. Our society talks about marriage as work. The children in society are not valued. Everything, you know, from beginning of life, to be honest with you, all the way through. How many times have we heard that children, oh, you know, I can't wait till my kids, whatever, you know, that you get out of that. Oh, they're teenagers now. Oh, you know. Well, they're gifts. They're the most precious gifts we have of sobriety, besides our relationship with God, our spouse. And so what I'm trying to say is that God turns that all inside out when we get in recovery. You know, these things that the society says, they become the most precious. And that's what I heard. I heard the heart of a mother. And sometimes I have to talk to guys when they first get in sobriety, because they sit there and they go, you know, I'm not, they get jealous. Now for one time they finally want to be in coupleship and partnership, and they're like, my wife, I'm second fiddle at home. The kids are number one. And I say, hey, guess what? God made her that way. A mother's heart is the most mysterious, beautiful heart. And guys, we'll never understand that. But that's the truth. And at the same time, paradoxically, the woman can't, you know, I mean, it's the man and woman together. And the guys, we take care of the periphery, guard the perimeter, as my sponsor says. And I think the mother needs to understand, if I may say it this way, on the spouse side, is that my wife is the most precious person to me on earth. You can't compare love, okay? You can't compare love. I love my three daughters. I have three beautiful daughters, two grandsons. My middle daughter is going to get married. My oldest is already married, obviously. And my middle daughter is getting married in August. But I'll tell you, the most precious person that God in my heart of a husband is my wife. She's the queen. And then from there, everything goes out. And I heard that. I think God designed the marriage that way. And when I can accept that, when both people can accept that, it makes it a whole lot easier in that household, that early recovery household. I think partnership is working towards the same goal, the goal of growing in love. And I heard that this weekend too. You know, that love of God, family, each other. What is love? I guess I could have sung a song about that. I could have sung many songs about that, right? What is love? The best definition I ever heard was from St. Thomas Aquinas. Love is the unselfish willing of good for others. Love is the unselfish willing of good for others. There's three parts to that. There's the unselfish part, where I have to die to self. There's the willing, which is all the only gift I've got. If you think about it, I have no control over my body, my life, even my psyche, my wife, the health, the world. It didn't end yesterday, I guess. All I have is my will. Where do I point my nose? And God takes it the rest of the way. They were asking me at breakfast, well, you ready, Lee? I said, well, if God's ready, I'm ready. Because I'm just the fan. I'm going to plug into the wall, the outlet of the wall, and let God turn the fan on. And hot air will start to blow, I guess. But, you know, that is love. It's the unselfish willing of good for others. You know, I know we have many family members, maybe sons and daughters, spouses, that we hurt for. We long for goodness to happen in them, in their lives, right? That prayer, unselfish willing of good, has nothing to do with anything outside myself. What I'm trying to say to you is prayer for that person. Unconditional love for that person. And then God lets the rest of it grow. I was, early on in recovery, I was at I used to play guitar at Mass and things like that, and I was up there one during a sermon, and I kind of faded off, to be honest with you, from the sermon, but it was a good thing. I faded off into this conversation, if I may be so bold, with God. And I just was like, God, I love you so much. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? I just can't believe this love affair now I have with you and just want to go out in the world. And I just can't stand it. And he said, I just want you to be. See, he knew I had the doing down. I had the doing down pat. He says, I just want you to be. In fact, be a tree. I'm sitting there, what? Be a tree. He said, look at this. I plant the seed, and what does the tree do? It only grows in response to everything I give it. I give it the earth, the sunlight, the water, the wind, and all it does is grow in response to everything I give it. You talk about coupleship. That's the ultimate coupleship, isn't it? My coupleship with God. You know? And if I don't have that coupleship with God, there's no other coupleships possible. Be a tree. I work with guys. God seems to bring engineers and stuff like that in my life. I wonder why. And we like to, we get the first step down, that I'm powerless, unmanageable, and insane, the second step. But we, a lot of times, we can even gloss over the second step, that, hey, it's about God, I believe in God, let's check the box, let's move on. That's not what the second step's about. The second step is about coming to believe with every fiber of my being on the sustenance of God, just like those trees out there. We can't engineer this, is my point. We work hard, and we should work hard, but we have to leave the results to God, and that's really hard to do. Right? It's really hard to do. So it's a commitment to God. The other thing is, in this coupleship that I saw this weekend, and I've seen it in my own marriage, is commitment to appreciation to the mystery of that other person. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. I've never read the book, I probably should. It's appreciating the mystery. You know, I used to tell people, especially when I was, you know, trying to justify my acting out, I used to tell, well, you know, my wife is just the opposite of me. You know, we're just opposites. And I've come to see us as complements. Complements of each other. And it's a beautiful thing. We heard John talk about, there's my recovery, there's my relationship with God and self and others and fellowship. We heard Barbara talk about her relationship with God, others, fellowship. And then there was this other beautiful, mysterious bond of which both come incomplete and complete and complement each other. There's no comprehending that, so don't try. And I appreciate more and more, especially amazingly enough, after 28 years of marriage, 29 almost, watching my wife, even in these last two sessions, with awe at the beautiful, mysterious person that's in there on her journey. You know, guys, we'll never understand women. Let's just put that aside. I mean, did you see last night how quickly Barb said she had blue eyes instead of green? She didn't bat an eyelash. I mean, that's, you don't want to mess with that. Later to get up here and say, well, I really have green eyes. We've been all had, including John.
Especially.
Yeah. So there's no, you know, we're outgunned, okay? We're totally outgunned. And I think for the Essanon, if I may speak, if I may respectfully speak here, is that I don't think the Essanon will ever understand addiction. What it's like to be addicted. Well, you have, I'm sure you've grown in that, I'm sure you've accepted that, and that's what my wife has done. But my wife has come to accept, and she really has, that she'll never understand addiction. Now, my wife loves popcorn. My wife, she adores popcorn. And the best thing I used even last week in our session was when I was talking about sometimes my attraction to her, which, you know, transcends passion, it transcends everything sometimes. I said, just imagine, okay, when you're walking in the movie theater and you smell that popcorn, honey, and just what happens inside of you. You're just like, I gotta have that popcorn. Even though you maybe just she ate dinner the other night, and then we went to a movie, and, you know, on top of a dinner, she had popcorn, and she was miserable. And I said, that's what this draw of addiction is like, is that we just can't stand it. You know, we just come, there's a magnet, you know, and we just can't stand it. And so that's as close as I can tell you what addiction is like, is you just like, can't stand it any longer. Even though we're good people. And that's the thing I had to learn. I had to get a partnership with myself early on. To understand that I was a sick person and admit that, but I wasn't a bad person. That's what you guys started teaching me. And in that new partnership sprang everything else with God and everything else. So there's really a partnership and a commitment to self. I'll never forget, I used to go running. Let's see, what stays here is here, right? That's right. I used to go running with this woman that I was having the affair with along the lake. And we ran along the lake, and we kind of made it our own, quote unquote. Well, after I was sober, it's kind of tough to avoid Lake Ontario when you live in Rochester, New York. It's right on the lake. You're seeing the lake, every other day. And the idea that that was hers and my lake was tearing me up. So I went up to that lake on a lunch hour in recovery here now, a few weeks in recovery. And I went back to reclaim that lake for me and God. And as I ran along the path, I'm going to tell you this, I've never told this in a meeting before. As I ran along the path, all of a sudden, I came to the end of the path, which I had passed before, and you loop around, you go around somewhere else, and there was a beautiful statue of Mary holding Jesus about this high. White statue of Mary holding Jesus. Mary. And I immediately saw it for the first time. My eyes had been scaled over. And I knelt at the statue in honor of God. And for the first time I realized that I had been held captive by something that I was getting free of and I wanted to be free of. And as I ran back to my car, I started crying as I ran. I heard a child inside of me, maybe 12 years old, the inner child, John Bradshaw. I never heard of the inner child at that point. And the child was crying, saying, "I never meant to hurt anybody. I never meant to hurt anybody." And I said to that child, "I promise to take care of you. One day at a time, the rest of my life." And so far, however haltingly, I've had that partnership. As a matter of fact, going back to those gifts and that new sobriety, they say in AA, from the time we start acting out, drinking, that's where our maturity stops. That's where our growing stops. When we get sober, I was 30 years old when I got sober and into SA. I had the psychology, if you will, or the essence of a 14-year-old. Now, that's a good and bad thing, by the way. It's not a bad thing. It certainly means I have to grow, of course. And I'll still have some temper tantrums. And I'll still be rebellious. And I'll still think that my parents are stupid. But the good part about it that I started embracing is that 14-year-olds like to have fun. I started shooting off model rockets again, for example. This time with my kids. Or by myself. What the heck? I started playing Legos with my little 3 and 5-year-olds, and really enjoying that. So, as you start to come out, I know we got new people here, just embrace that child and just enjoy playfulness. That's a partnership with yourself. St. Teresa, I don't know if she's a saint, yes, but Mother Teresa of Calcutta had all her, the nun houses throughout the world, Sisters of Charity, and there was a requirement in that house, which you might not believe. An hour a day, they were supposed to commit to recreation. These are sisters picking people up off the street, and an hour a day was to recreation. And that's a commitment to that partnership, that coupleship with myself, and recreation recreation. Isn't that amazing? So I have to commit to having some of that fun. You know, on a weekend, I didn't know what to do with my weekends when I got sober. And what I came up with, being the engineer, of course, was a template, if I may use that heady term. It was, my weekend involved spirituality, some work, maybe work around the house, or maybe some work, you know, a little bit, and recreation. Typical Saturday for me is I get up, I go to my 8:30 to 10 meeting, maybe talk with a guy or two after the meeting, get out there around 11 or 10:30. I've done my spirituality. Now, of course, we're going to pray throughout the day. We're going to try to be God's channel throughout the day. But I've had a block of spirituality. Go home, maybe run some errands, go out, do the honey-do list or whatever, and then maybe about 3 or 4 o'clock, go down and play guitar or go ride the bike. And what happened for me early on in recovery is I would get to places like, what do I do with my time? You know, I'd get to that stuck point. And I would say to myself, okay, let me step back. I had my meeting this morning. I've been working out in the yard. Or maybe the opposite. I got home and just started playing, whatever, right? And I'm starting to get a little grumpy, what am I doing here? Oh, I need to do some work. You know? Anyway, that just helped me a lot to be in partnership that way. So we have to embrace that mystery of the heart, mind, and soul. And really what I think it involves is the incomprehensible divinity within each one of us. The incomprehensible divinity. You know, I think God gave us divinity, and I would suspect most of you see it that way. There's a divinity, a divine within us. And I've never read this before, but I think part of why we misuse our powers is we have a divinity within us. You see, I'm not powerless in the absolute sense. I have extreme power to destroy. That is a power I do have. It's a misuse of this divine, intimate, infinite power. And so part of my partnership is to embrace that divinity, respect that divinity in myself and where it can go, and offer it back to God who gave it in the first place, and then respect that divinity within my wife and others. One of the gifts of sponsoring, in that partnership of sponsoring, is that when I see the guy who's come in or been there for a while and having to restart their program, I look across the table and I see somebody good. They may be so full of shame they can't see it themselves, but I see that kernel of goodness. And I'm sure for the Essenons, if I may boldly speak again, that they see that kernel. And that's what keeps them in that hope. My wife calls it the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You know, Dr. Jekyll predominated, and he still can come out, sadly enough. But she knew the good part. She saw the good part. And that's what I see in the guys I work with. That's that divinity within. So I think there's a commitment to understanding, gentleness. And I love what I heard yesterday about the commitment to trying to grow in communication. Wow. When Barbara said that she had to take out a couple key words out of her vocabulary when she talked with John. Don't use the word always. Don't use the word never. This is inflaming to a guy. I'll tell you this much. And I wanted to stand up and give her a standing ovation. I wanted to buy the CD, I don't care how much it costs, and take it home. And that's a commitment to communicating. You know, there's nothing, I'm sorry, there's nothing that sparks me so much to say, you've never. See, I'm an engineer, okay? I'm an engineer. If you said to me, 80% of the time, this is what you do, I'd be like, yeah, that's fine, that's cool. I can handle that. I know what that means. But the words never and always are really, to be honest and very serious, they're a condemnation. They're a condemnation. You know, you will never change. Man, never say that to, I'm sorry, but never say that to anybody. That is an absolute, in my opinion. Never say that to anybody. That is, or never even think that. If I know we have people in our families that, you know, they'll never change. We cannot do that. That is a disparaging thought that leaves God out of the equation. Okay? But I love her commitment to communication. And my wife is getting that too, by the way. If she ever hears the CD, I got some more explaining to do. But, you know, she, one of the things I don't know if I shared this Friday night, but I shared it, is that this amazing rationalization, you know, that I can do, which is really lying to myself. But I sincerely haven't tried to deceive her. And now she's got this idea now, okay, because she would call me a liar even a month ago. You're lying to me. I'm like, I'm not lying. This is what I really thought. And then the next day I come to her and go, you know, that is what I really thought, but that was screwed up. And so she understands now that I'm not lying, and that's helped me a lot on that communication. But it allows me the freedom to come back and say, I was deluded. I was rationalizing. This was BS. It gives me that freedom. You know, that's the other commitment that I saw this weekend, is that they had the freedom. They've given each other that freedom and that space to grow. We had a reading over in the 10th Step workshop, which was a really good workshop. I forget who facilitated it. But anyway, we had a really good reading over there which said that I'm the key. And I'm the key. And basically the guy is just ticked off his wife. She's not changing. She's just rooted in her stuff. He goes on a fishing trip. He realizes as he's back, as he talks with this other sexaholic, that his attitude is keeping her in bondage. His attitude is. And that if he can just open up his attitude, see her as a child of God, as a fellowship member in this fellowship of humanity, even if she's not going to Essamon, see her as a fellowship of humanity. And he walked in that house with a new attitude, and she cautiously started coming out. I've heard it said, guys, that women are like a flower. Sometimes closed, and then sometimes opened up, very cautiously. But if they get hurt, it closes back. Now, when I've seen my wife open like a flower, I'll be honest with you, it scares me sometimes. Because it's like, wow. I think it's because I'm looking at the face of God in many respects. That beautiful love, unconditional love of God. But boy, do I regret it when I make that flower close. So I got to be committed to that, you know. I got to be committed to the fact that life has beauty and pain right next to it. Right next to it. You've all seen a rose. What's your first thought about a rose?
Thorn.
Oh. Aha. Uh-huh. Keep coming back, but anyway. I'm going to take this off. It's getting warm. But that's good, Mike. You stole my thunder. Roses are beautiful, right? And that was probably the first thing most of you thought. But there is the thorns right there. You got to be careful how you handle a rose, or you get hurt. So that's the commitment to gentleness, and understanding. And on my part, as far as communicating, and this is something I want to share with you that just came to me. I think an angel sat down across me at the truck dealer the other day. I was kind of in a really bad place. I was nervous about a meeting that was going to happen at work, and I was just very honestly depressed. I was almost catatonic. It was just this sad state. And this guy sat across me, came, you know how it is, you're waiting in this place, and I was over off to the side, and he sat right across from me, and he started saying, oh, you're from Ohio. He had a Ohio State hat and all that stuff with me. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And I didn't want to talk. I was so irritated that this guy came to me. And it ended up being one of the most awesome conversations. It took me out of myself. It was amazing. And one of the things he shared with me was a life story. He was in a one of these life classes that taught by John Wooden, the basketball coach. I think he's the most successful record in history in the professional basketball league. Phenomenal philosophy and man. He was giving a class, and this guy was in it, I think in the company that this guy worked in, motivational class. And he asked this guy, actually, to come up amongst the 50 people. And so Tony, this is my new friend Tony, came up and John Wooden had a basketball, and he threw the basketball to Tony. And Tony caught the ball. Okay, and then he had a professional basketball player, John did, probably has good access to professionals. And he asked the pro to throw the ball to Tony. And so the pro did what he does on the basketball court. He threw the ball to Tony. He about knocked his fingers off. Tony's like, you know, his knuckles, you know, bruised. And so John said, let me ask you, Tony, which pass did you prefer to receive? He's like, of course the pass from you, John. And he says, tell you what, as you go through life interacting with others, you're going to need to learn how to throw the basketball. Sometimes hard, sometimes more gently. Instantly, I realized what I do. I go to work every day, most would do. I'm in a professional environment. We throw the basketball pretty hard. I mean, I'm in engineering. We're trying to solve problems. We're debating each other. We're trying to figure out solutions. Hey, it's back and forth. What do you think about this? No, that's not going to work. You know, when I get home, how do I throw the basketball? Same way. My wife comes from a different world, profession. She's a different gender. I can't throw the basketball to her that way. I got to learn how to throw the basketball. That's a commitment. That's a partnership. The commitment to being present in the day and present in my marriage. John talked about this several times, that there was no escape hatch on his marriage. I'm telling you, I had the same thing. I had that little back door. I want to tell you that my wife had a, when I was way before sobriety, maybe 3 years, whatever, she had her tubes tied, tubal ligation, to not have any more children. And I got to be honest with you, and I think we did process this and share this, because we both regretted it since then, is that the reason why I was supportive of that, and you probably know where I'm going, is I didn't know if the marriage was going to last. I had that escape hatch right there. You know? I was in the exit row. I was in the exit row. And I thought, three kids is enough damage to if I leave. When I got sober, within about a year sober, in that very trying, tumultuous time, I remember standing in the bathroom, and she was ticked about, you know, whatever, we're all hot. And she brought up the D word as far as, you know, something about divorce, whatever. And I said to her, I said, for me, divorce is not an option. And that's the first time I ever said that out loud. Divorce is not an option. I said, there's no back door anymore. I'm committed. It's going to be your decision if that's the case, but I'm committed. And she looked at me. She had mixed feelings, I suspect. And I'm just guessing, because, you know, I'm just guessing, I'm a man. Is that she was still ticked that I kind of had almost maybe trapped, you know. But at the other thing I could see in her eyes was she couldn't believe that commitment. In the heat of a battle, I would pledge that commitment. And that was a moment for me. That was a spiritual moment, at least for me. I don't know about her. But there's no back door. There's commitment to the present, and there's commitment to the future. Now, we talk about being in the moment. That's good. But if I'm not committed to the future, why be here today? I mean, if the rapture was really coming, would any of you have showed up Friday night? I'd be like, no, you know. Call Tom. Hey, I'm not showing up, you know. But I'm committed to the future. And there's something about us addicts that I want to share with you. Is that I started realizing is when I acted out, or even in sobriety, in recovery, when I sit there and go, you know, I don't really need to do that or whatever. It's, you know, I'm going to go, you know. Sometimes that's a good thing. you know, you need a break or whatever. Not often. But most of the time it's rooted in the laziness, the thing that John talked about, or whatever. You know what it is? I'm not loving my future self. I'm not loving my future self when I don't take care of myself in the present. You're all sitting here right now, I suspect, because you love your future self enough to sit here and try to be open. You know? And God is well pleased. Right now, God is up in heaven after this whole weekend. And he's got pictures of every single one of you in his wallet. And he's showing all of his angels that there's 50 to 60 people, I guess, from what I heard. And there's, whatever, 25 in this room right now that are trying. They're trying as best they can to come closer to me. That's what he's telling his angels right now. Do you think God will honor you later when you have to pray out or cry out to God for help? He will honor you because of your commitment to now, in the present. So I have to have a commitment in my partnership with self, with God, to my spouse, to that future, to my children. So it's a commitment to the present, it's a commitment to tomorrow. You know, I need to stop drilling holes in this same boat that I'm in with my spouse. What am I doing? It's insane. So it's a commitment to that foundation. And I guess that, what is the foundation? I already spoke about it. God, recovery, sobriety, and emotional sobriety. Bill Wilson talked about emotional sobriety in one of the Grapevine letters, and if you ever get a chance to read it, it's an awesome reading. And if you're interested or whatever, you know, we can get it to Tom or whatever. But what he says in there, the essence of what he says about emotional sobriety is freedom from the dependence upon anything except for God. Rooting out all those attachments. I'm talking about dependence. I'm not talking about connection here, because we've all been talking about connection all weekend to spouse, to fellowship, to people in the world. I'm not talking about connection. I'm talking about unhealthy dependence. I'm dependent upon the guy at the gas station. I'm dependent upon the trash man. I'm dependent upon my wife as far as cooking dinner. I make hot dogs. But it would be a sad life, you know, a very plain life. But so there's the dependencies. But I'm not talking about, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about those dependencies. I'm talking about the dependency of my identity, for example. That boss. Why'd you have a good day at work? Because the boss gave me a thumbs up. That's natural. I'm not going to beat myself up about that. But on the other hand, if the boss looks at me with a scowl, I have to make a conscious decision of like, hey, you know what? I'm doing the best I can. Here's the deal. He may have gas. You know, I don't know. I'm not in his world. So it's a commitment to knowing that I'm a child of God. He's a child of God. God bless him. I hope he has a good day. How's that working for you? You know, whatever it is. So emotional sobriety is what I have to ask God for. And that's a great letter. It's in the book Soul of Sponsorship. If you ever get that book, look it up, Google it or Amazon it. Soul of Sponsorship. It's at the end. It's one of the appendices. And that's a fantastic book. Bill Wilson corresponding with his Jesuit sponsor, if you will, in St. Louis, back and forth, Father Ed Dowling. Fantastic book. Emotional sobriety is at the end of that book as an appendix. So I have to have a commitment to that. And I want to thank everybody that had the commitment to make this happen. The Denver Fellowship. When I came out of here 18 years ago on my way back down to interview in Colorado Springs, I stopped at an SA meeting in Denver. And again, you can't, you know, I'm judging by one meeting, but there was no sobriety. It was three people or four people, I don't know how many it was. And I had to stay sober in spite of that meeting, to be honest with you. I'm sure we've all been to meetings here and there like that, you know. You go to enough meetings, you'll see that. But it was sad. And I know we had a Wichita regional conference that they had back 17 years ago or 16 years ago. And you know, Colorado Springs was fairly well represented. There was one person from Denver, one from Fort Collins. What I'm trying to say here is a miracle has occurred in Denver. A miracle. And I just thank you all for being channels of that miracle so that we're sitting here today on this weekend. This is amazing what you guys have put together, what God has put together. And I want to thank you as I start to close here to that commitment that you've done. It's helped me tremendously. I'm sure it's helped John and Barb tremendously to come out here this weekend too. And we have a new beginning. We have a new beginning as a result of this. And so you guys are just amazing to me. And I honestly hope that Colorado Springs can start to participate more. You know, I'm more of the Dr. Bob of the fellowship down there, who is just kind of more of the spiritual, you know, we're going to do this. I needed the Bill Wilson to come in there, if you remember, 10 years ago into the group or 12 years ago, that said, hey, we're going to start speaker meetings, we're going to run traditions, and Tom was his name. And he interacted with you guys. He had some meetings coming up here. If you remember Tom W., he was coming up here, he spoke up here. My gift is more of the Dr. Bob spiritual side. And we don't have the Bill Wilson down there necessarily, but so pray for the Bill Wilson that can come up here and start to interact. And Tom is drawing me in. He's saying, well, let's get some prison stuff going, Lee. And okay, I've been in prison 14 years. So he's trying to coax me in. But I pray that we can get a better partnership within Colorado Springs. And you guys are leading the way. You guys are leading the way. So I just thank you for that commitment to this partnership in Denver. It's fantastic. So what I'd like to do is, I think the next phase of this will be the open mic, where we just kind of share appreciations and reflect on the weekend. Before we do, if you be so kind, I'd like to just end with a little prayer, if we could. Just kind of get quieted down. Dear God, we thank you for the blessings that you've bestowed upon us this weekend. We thank you for the gift of John and Barbara. We ask your protection upon them as they leave here, as they're on the enemy number one list now that they've given this gift, that they be surrendered under your protection and care and cherish each other as they fly back, as they go back. We thank you for the gift of this Denver fellowship that organized this and all the hard work that went behind and your amazing blessings to bring us to this beautiful place here, this place physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We ask that we take all this out from here and be committed into our partnerships, into our coupleships, in all the places that God brings us, to family, spouses, boyfriend, girlfriends, workmates, that you bring us closer to you through our love of them. And we thank you, God, for this gift of sobriety, this gift of the Essanon recovery, and the gift of both of our fellowships. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. So now I believe, Charles, you'll take...